Hello and welcome to this episode of Passionate About People. I'm Phil Dave. I am a broadcaster who specializes in technology and men's mental health and well-being. On this episode, once again, joined by Graham Godfrey.
Hello there.
Graham, remind our listeners who you are.
I'm a life and business coach, and I specialize in helping people who are at a crossroads and they're not sure which path to take. And the premise of my coaching is to find your passion and do what you love.
And I'm delighted to say that we didn't scare him off on the last episode. So Grant Morgan has returned and joins us again. Grant, again, remind people who you are and what you do, sir.
I'm Grant Morgan, father of four, frustrated author, and here to deliver value to today's podcast.
That's a good enough title for me. Well, the title of this episode is called The Art of the Possible. So instantly, what I pick up from that is a very positive mental attitude. We covered that slightly on the last episode that we were all on. But the art of the possible is a much better way of looking at things than the art of the impossible. Instantly, that's what hits me, Grant.
It's a phrase that I talk about a lot, especially with my clients, about the art of the possible. Because it's an easier level to attain than the impossible. If you set your benchmark at the possible, then the chances are you will achieve it. There's a great thinking that, you know, if you shoot for the moon, you might reach the stars. But just set your level at the stars, and I believe you'll get there, if that is the possible.
Ah, but how does one know what is possible and what's within their limits? Because this is where I struggle, is that even though I am confident about what I can do in life, it doesn't mean that it's actually what I'm capable of doing, if you see what I mean. I think that there's difference between knowing
I do respect that, Phil, but at 53 years old, as much as I love playing football, I'm never going to be paid £200,000 a week in the Premier League. It's impossible. It's all very well if my parents told me I could be anything I want to be. But without that ability and talent, and I'm 53, it's never going to happen. So that isn't the art of the possible. That is absolutely the art of the impossible. And then we go into the realms of delusion.
Yeah, I get that. You're never going to be a Premiership footballer, Grant.
Oh, thanks.
Plus, you're in retirement age. They're not going to take you on. I think the way I come from it, and especially in my coaching, is I like to talk about what's possible for you, not just what's possible. And I find that sometimes when people need coaching and they're not sure which direction to take, they normally focus on what's not possible and what they can't do. And what we need to encourage is, when you think about what's possible for you, we start to encourage hope. And people start thinking, do you know what? If I could do this and if I could do that, that would be amazing. And then instantly in the brain, we become optimistic. We become optimistic about the things that we could do. If we then search for the things that we love, that make us happy, that we get excited about, then that creates passion. So you literally, from thinking about what's possible, your brain can flick from hope to optimism to passion. And I think that's a really exciting place to be.
And you can take that into the workplace, or you could take it into your personal life. If you took it into the workplace, I believe that lots of senior managers, directors, employers, they miss out on the art of the possible. So they take an employee who's never going to be able to achieve a certain role. They want them to do that. They want them to attain that level. But they don't have the skills. So isn't it better just to get them to do what they can do to the best of their ability, rather than getting them to do something that they're never, ever going to be able to achieve? And if you use the football analogy, it would be like asking a defender to be a great centre forward, or conversely, a midfielder to be a goalkeeper. It's just not going to happen. Just get those employees or get those team members to do what they can do better, best.
Now, you know that surely falls into a realm, though, of management as opposed to the art of the possible. Because the art of the possible, I would have thought, is a very a self-prophesizing mentality. So in other words, the art of the possible comes from you recognizing what you're able to do. But when you're talking about management, looking on their team and saying, well, actually, this person, I won't use the football analogy because anyone who knows me, I don't know the first thing about football. But I know that you mentioned two different positions and I've instantly forgotten what those positions were. But if you were to take someone who's in one position and then put them into another, then absolutely that makes no sense at all. But like I said, doesn't that come more down to how you manage the team around you? And is that then suddenly a bit of a different kettle of fish?
No, I don't think it is, because you're either asking someone to do something that is in their capability or outside of their capability. So while the instruction is being given from a third party, it's still about the person themselves, whether they are able to achieve the art of their possible.
I want to pick up on something that was said before, that if you have someone who tells someone else they can be whatever they want to be, I wonder how damaging that is. Because I actually believe that that can really mess up someone's ability to realize what they can achieve in life. Primarily, if a parent turns to their child and says, you can be whatever you want to be, I believe that that could be quite damaging, less than encouraging.
That's quite an, this is, we could talk about this for ages. I think what I've found speaking to a lot of the people that I speak to is that everybody has a different view of the world. So we tend to impose, and others impose their view of the world on us. But there's a lot of self-reflection that goes into that, Phil, because when somebody turns around and says to their child or to anybody, you can be whoever you want to be, they're actually self-reflecting and probably talking about themselves. And they could be talking about themselves in two lights. Either they totally believe they could be anything they want to be, or they believe the opposite is true. I don't think it's damaging for children because they don't have the experience of life that we have. And I think they should be given the opportunity to discover different things that they enjoy and then pursue those things. I think it's wrong to place our self-limiting beliefs on our children or on others. I think it's so important that people are given the opportunity to grow within themselves. And if it doesn't happen, possibly have the expectation that if it doesn't happen, they can try something else.
Oh, but that's a different point, managing expectation, isn't it?
It is, but it's all part of the possible. I'll give you an expectation. I've injured my right hand. I've torn two tendons in the base of my thumb.
How did you do that?
I was playing paddle. Well, I was doing a bit of boxing and paddle tennis and it snapped. So
I thought you were going to say you went for a paddle. I'm so sorry.
No, paddle tennis.
Okay, that makes much more sense.
Spain's most popular sport. And I'll give you an example. So
I thought they like to chase a bull in Spain.
Anyway, so
you were boxing and playing paddle tennis.
Right. So I haven't been able to play paddle tennis for 3 months and I can't play. So I spoke to the paddle coach and he said to me, well, why don't you learn to play with your left hand instead of your right hand? And it had never occurred to me to even attempt to do that. Mm. After thinking about it, I realized that I'm actually not particularly good playing with my right hand anyway. So it might be worth learning to play with my left hand. But I've started to practice with my left hand and it is probably one of the most difficult things I've ever done. But I'm learning to do it.
Do you think you could be a professional paddle tennis player?
Absolutely not.
Is that not the art? There's no art of a possible in there.
There's no art of a possible.
And why is that?
Because I'm not fit enough, I'm too old, and I'm only playing paddle tennis for the enjoyment. I'm not playing it to become a world champion. Okay. If I was doing something to become a world champion, then it's possible that I'm actually barking up the wrong tree in anything that I try. But I don't see any barriers. I just like to have a go and see what happens. But I take your point, Grant.
I wonder, though, whether or not this translates into work environment, though, because I feel like it's very different. If you're doing something like playing sport, trying it with another hand to see whether or not if that makes it easier or harder to play the game, it's not quite the same risk that's involved when you sort of say, look at it in a business sense, where you suddenly think, not sure if this job is working for me. I might need to do something else that's more within the realm of possibility. And I just wonder whether or not if people would have that same kind of mentality and be so willing to recognize what's possible and to achieve what's possible without actually sort of thinking about, ooh, is this going to leave me up a certain creek?
Well, I gave a talk last week. I was saying that some of our greatest business successes in our agency have come from a starting point of no, where we were told, you can't do this. It's not going to happen. It's not a great idea. Forget it. Move on. And there's something in my DNA that's never liked the word no. It's a great starting point. And as I said, some of our great successes started being told no, or you can't do it. And at each point, we looked at the art of the possible. Did that no come from a good place? Or did that no come from a, you know something, if we engage with you on this, it's just going to be too much like hard work. We're going to have to put it on the too hard to do pile. And that's not coming from a good place. And that fired us up to take whatever the initiative was to market and make it a huge success. And invariably we did.
I love that, because I have a saying that yes lives in the land of no. And a lot of the things that I coach is we're taught to use persuasive techniques when we're selling. But actually, you learn more from a no than you do from a yes. When somebody says yes to you, not quite sure why they said yes. But when they say no, and it could be a definite no, you've got license to say, look, I understand that you don't want to deal with me or you're not going to buy my product, but can you just tell me why you said no? You can learn more from somebody when they said no. And when they tell you why they said no, then you understand the reasons and you can maybe perfect what the product that you're offering or the service that you're selling in order to maybe get a yes. But normally there's only probably a maximum of 10 no's to anything. But I like to invite no's. I enjoy no's. A no is my friend.
You know, I was just thinking, not no as in no, no as in you know, that I was just thinking about, on a really trivial level, yes or no is not necessarily going to determine whether or not something is possible or not. And if I give you a really trivial example of that, this weekend just gone, I found myself at a shop. The brand is slightly irrelevant, so it doesn't really matter, though it is a well-known brand. I was standing outside and I realized there are a few queues to get into this particular shop. And there were queues for different reasons, whether you were collecting something, whether or not you had an appointment to browse, or one of the other reasons. Anyway, I didn't realize that one needed to make an appointment in order to purchase a product. So I got turned away. I got told, no, it's not going to be possible that you can come into the store today and make a purchase. Now, bearing in mind that what I was about to purchase was not a couple of pounds, it was quite a few £100. Anyway, when I said to them, look, I don't know what on earth has happened to the world in the age in which we're living in, but it makes no sense to me that I'm begging you to spend a lot of money with your store, okay? And you cannot tell me it's not possible. It is possible. The answer that you're looking for is yes, no problem. This shop is not busy at the moment. Come on in, let's see what we can do. So don't tell me it's not possible just because you're saying, no, sorry, there's nothing we can do about it, when actually there is. Do you see what I mean? So even though it's trivial.
Is that not just smart marketing on their part?
What, the fact that I'm crying out to go in?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost reverse psychology. How many times in life does the rejection make you work that much harder?
Well, you say that, but I think only to a certain type of individual, don't you think, Graham? Because I don't believe for a second that everyone's got the ability to absorb no and then work at it to get a yes. Because sometimes I think people break easier than that.
I was writing something down when Grant was talking, because I loved Grant's example. And to answer your question, yes is the destination. No is how you get there.
Look at that. It's like the birth of philosophy on this podcast.
I think people fall back into the negative in that if you say to somebody, look, I really want to tell you something. Actually, no, you won't be interested. The first thing they turn around and say is, no, what were you going to say? Whereas, well, sometimes when you volunteer some information, they don't listen.
The phrase I used earlier about the too hard to do pile, I use it in a business context. I run an agency. We pitch to brands. We pitch to retailers. We pitch to corporations. And invariably, the people we are pitching to, if they say yes, there's work for them to do. They have to do something. And that's why I use the phrase, well, it's easier to say no because it'll go on the too hard to do pile. And that's a huge challenge when you are creating anything from a low base and when you need a third party to engage to facilitate it to make that happen. And there are lots of well-documented sales skills deployed to make a customer buy your product or service. Some are very soft, some are horribly hard. But if you are pitching the art of the possible, then maybe you're right, Graham. Maybe yes is the destination. No, or no is the destination. Oh, I've forgotten what you said now.
So I said, yes is the destination. No is how you get there.
I'm starting to sound like Dr. Seuss now.
It's not about selling. It's about people buying your product. They don't want to feel like they're being sold to. So when you're talking to people, I think one of the easiest ways is to try and induce a no. It's try, rather than trying to get someone to say yes, try and get them to say no. Because once they say no, you're going to learn a little bit more about them. And most people only don't buy because they're scared or they're worried or they've got some fears associated to that product, or they just simply don't understand what you're talking about. So they'll just say no. But once you can find out what it is, most people would turn around and say, they'll either say yes, or if you were to say to them, look, can you think of any reason why you wouldn't go ahead? They just say no, which is a positive yes.
You may be a little bit too young to remember the film Bugsy Malone, Phil.
I remember it well and loved it.
So I think
Phil might have been in it.
Yeah, he looked a little bit like David Fleck.
Can I just say, I was in all seriousness, I was in the sort of the school production of it. Does that count?
Yes, it does.
There you go.
You can be our Dexter Fletcher.
Thanks. I'm a sinner, candy-coated.
There's a Reprise song which has the line, we could have been anything that we wanted to be.
Oh, yes.
So, to your point, Phil, right at the beginning of this podcast, your angst with children, as the analogy being told, they can be anything they want to be, and then being let down when they don't achieve their goal or that objective. Are you saying we can't be anything we want to be?
Well, to further that analogy, there's another line within that very song you quote where they say, but we're the very best at being bad. So in other words, they recognize their limits. Yeah, they recognize their limits. They recognize what they're good at, in a really weird and ironic sort of twist of the words. But the point is that they recognize their limits and therefore that's what they play on. Okay, I'm not encouraging people to start going and breaking the law or what have you, but the point is that that is them recognizing their abilities. And by saying we could have been anything we want to be is a little bit easier than actually achieving anything they wanted to achieve.
I mean, Grant said earlier, aim for the stars, reach for the moon. I absolutely love that. I think it's about aiming high, because in a lot of cases you might fail when you set a target. But if you aim high, very high, and you fail, at least the result that you get will probably be greater than most people's biggest successes.
Yeah, I work for a guy and he believed that if you want to do business with a company, write to the chairman. And he said, because if you write to the chairman, that letter will eventually rest with the right person. But if you approach that business too far down the chain, it'll probably just get ignored. It will never rise up. And I've deployed that over the last 30 years in business. If we've created a really good idea, we've written to the senior person within that business, and they have deferred it to their right-hand man or their right-hand woman, and it's reached the right level. And that's the same as you've just said, Graham. You know, shoot for the stars and you might, or shoot for the moon and you might end up at the stars.
And what's even more exciting, because obviously, you know, I'm living my dream now. I'm coaching. I absolutely love what I do. I meet all sorts of different people, and I'm doing what I love. So if you imagine if you could aim as high as possible and do what you love and live your dream, however far you get, you'll always have that feeling that you had a go and you did it and you enjoyed the journey on the way.
Well, might I say it, one of my mantras of life is I would always rather regret doing something than regret not doing it.
Yes, I like that very much, actually. Can you repeat it?
You like it so much you can't remember it.
No, because I want to get it right and don't want to go back into Zeus land.
I said that I would always rather regret doing something than regret not doing it. Just in summary, gentlemen, because I'm very aware that time is our enemy at the moment, if someone listening to this right now thinks, I have no idea of even knowing where to start knowing what is possible in my life, what advice would you give them?
I would ask them to list out what it is that they love, what it is that they enjoy, what are their passions, and use that as a starting point. Everybody will have something that they enjoy. I would say take money out of the equation for the time being. Money can be created later. Focus on what you want and what you love, and then let that be your first step.
It depends who that person is, of course, and what their responsibilities are. I don't want to be that parent telling the listener, as my child, that you can be whatever you want to be and you can do whatever you want to do. I think they have to think about their skills, but equally their limitations. Don't think you're going to be a professional footballer if you probably can't even kick a ball. Go with your gut. I said this last time. Normally our gut is right, whether it's about our perception of others, whether it's about our ability. And surround yourself with good people who will give you strong, honest advice. What I wouldn't suggest is you just have an idea and you go and do it. I think you need some good people around you. You need good sounding boards. And if they agree with your idea, then absolutely pursue it.
And I would say, for what it's worth, I've already mentioned about not wanting to regret not doing something. Double negative, but you know what I mean. But I would also say feed off of intuition. So very much along the lines of what you've said, go with your gut. And equally as important is ask someone who you know will be honest with you. Because if you get that, it's so much better working from someone else's perspective, because they'll have an outside view rather than you being stuck in the middle of it.
Yeah, because as human beings, we're not very good at holding that mirror up to ourselves.
Gentlemen, I think that that's all we've got time for. So just in case anyone listening would like to get in touch with us, how do they do so? Grant, let's start with you.
You can contact me, grant@louiskennedy.com, L-O-U-I-S, or on Twitter, my handle is Grant Guna.
Oh dear, I used to like you. Okay, and Graham, please.
You can email me, gg@passionateaboutbusiness.co.uk, and the website is the same, but without the GG.
And for whatever ridiculous reason you might have to contact me, you could always find me on phil@phildave.co.uk. It's Phil with one L, if you don't mind. And along social media lines, you'll find me at Mr. Phil Dave. Graham Godfrey, Grant Morgan, and for myself, Phil Dave. Gents, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It has. It's been fun.
A lot of fun. Thanks, guys.